Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection, and it's Ken Lovett. You know, Ken, I know we keep inviting you back, and I don't want you to be too embarrassed by it, but you are the go-to guy in state government now. It's terrific that you find this time to join us, and I want to thank you for that.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. So Ken Lovett is the columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News. There are so many things going on. But I mean, the thing about politics, especially New York State politics, is every once in a while, something makes you laugh. I mean, you get a good belly laugh. And here I see that George Pataki is running for president. Now, there's a ha-ha if I ever saw one.
Again, he's running for president. Every 4 years, it's kind of like a political Groundhog's Day.
It's like Harold Stassen used to do for the Republic.
Yes, yeah. Every 4 years, he pops up and says, I'm considering a run. He's done this in 2008, 2012, and now, you know, for those cycles, and now he's out there again. He's been in New Hampshire a couple of times, South Carolina, even has an ad up this time, trying to get into the mix. Nobody gives him a chance. You know, the guy's been out of office 7 years. He wasn't a serious candidate when he was in office. But now, given, you know, he's got in his record as governor a pro-gun control, pro-gay rights. I mean, not exactly your standard GOP primary issues. He's not known. You know, how he's going to raise money is a
who
big
he,
question mark.
Who he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. People say, well, who's this guy?
Yeah.
So why does he do it?
Well, that's a good question. Those close to him say he is really serious. He, you know, he's 69, which is crazy, but you know, you don't think of him that as 69, but they feel it's his last shot. He's always wanted to try it. Others believe that he's angling for something, whether it's to just get his name out there so he can be on cable TV and be a little bit of a pundit, be part of the national dialogue. It could be he's trying to drum up, you know, attention that helps his consulting and law firm businesses.
How about vice president.
That was one I heard, a very, very, very long shot. Maybe he wants to be seen as a vice presidential contender or a cabinet position. Again, I think those are unlikely as well.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting that when the fickle finger of fame hits you, how can you tell somebody who was governor of New York, big job, three times, that he can't be president?
Yeah, well, look, you know, I mean, he's got to know it's an uphill battle at best, but he's out there. He's doing his thing. Even the polling services, they're not polling him. You know, there's about two dozen Republican names that are out there, and pollsters I spoke to said, look, the guy's a bottom tier candidate of all these two dozen. Nobody knows him. Nobody, you know, he doesn't have a fundraising base right now. You know, he's been out of office 7 years. But he likes to be out there.
Well, you know, from a personal perspective, and I don't know if there's any place for personal perspective here, I can tell you that at one point he tried to take the state money away from just this radio station because he wasn't happy with what we were doing. And somebody told me a story, I don't think it was apocryphal, that he mentioned the Chartok boys. And he said, yeah, well, you know, Lewis, the brother, I like him a lot, but Alan, not so much. So I might have to go to Sweden if he becomes a president.
Yeah, that would be an interesting scenario now, wouldn't it? I don't think you're going to have to pack your bags so quickly.
Broadcasting from Sweden now.
But look, you know, I mean, weird things that maybe, you know, again, I don't see a real pathway there, but he's looking and he's got a right and he is getting out there and he's
sure
talking about issues. And so, look, you know, the more the merrier, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I certainly agree with that. So that's one of the good stories. Another good story that you've been working on is the Speaker of the Assembly. Let me ask you a question. There was a big Vito Lopez problem. And so Sheldon Silver, the Speaker, has to still look back on this thing because there are always people who are suing him and saying, you didn't get in early enough, you didn't do enough. What's that all about?
Yeah, there's a federal lawsuit and a state lawsuit that have named Silver. The federal lawsuit names Silver, the state lawsuit names the Assembly as a whole. And basically what they're saying is that these two women who used to work for Silver, who were sexually harassed, according to the State Ethics Committee, they used to work for Lopez, who was a Brooklyn lawmaker.
Just stop there and remind everybody, because, you know, people forget awfully quickly.
Vito Lopez was a very, very powerful Brooklyn leader, Democratic leader, very powerful assemblyman for a lot of years.
And the accusation is he
couldn't keep his hands off at least 8 interns. Two of them are now suing Silver, saying that Silver didn't do enough to protect them, because what they're saying is the speaker entered into a secret $103,000 settlement with two other people who said they were sexually harassed, who were sexually harassed first. So now these other women are saying, well, had he taken action against Lopez back then with those two other women, we would have been protected. So they're suing. And now Shelley Silver, who this really was a huge political problem for him last year and 2012. It looked like to some that it could topple him. It didn't happen. And now the last several months, Silver's been sitting pretty. All the attention's been on the governor and some of his problems, you know, with Moreland. All the attention's been on the Senate and what would happen would the Democrats take it over. And the speaker got reelected easily. He's going to be the speaker again. He's going to set the record for longevity. He figured he was past this all. But now, this month, December 17th, he may have to sit down and relive it again because he's going to be deposed by the two women's lawyers for this lawsuit. Well, he's going to have to answer some tough questions.
Well, now, in the past, he's been able, as you indicated to us so perceptively, to avoid the whole thing by paying off, using assembly money to pay off. Why can't he just do that again here?
Well, we may see that, because this week there was, I'm sure he does not want to sit down for this deposition.
Sure.
And this week there was a court-mandated settlement conference. They were in there for 10 hours, the different sides, not the speaker himself, but his lawyer. The assembly lawyer was there, and the women's lawyers, and the two women were there too. And they were in there for 10 hours. The judge put a gag order on them, so we don't know what happened. But the feeling is they're probably going to try and reach a settlement, certainly before the speaker has to sit down and be deposed.
Yeah, but where does it stop? Let's say these two get paid off. Certainly others will say, give me mine.
Good question, right? I mean, that's certainly an issue that could come up.
For listeners of this program, though, we talk about Vito Lopez, a thing of the past. But in terms of understanding New York politics, he was a very powerful man, and nothing was happening in this state without the boss of Brooklyn checking in, which is what he was.
Yeah, he was very powerful, both in Brooklyn and the city and here in Albany. He was the housing committee chair, which is, you know, a pretty good committee to have. You know, things had to go through him. Candidates went through him. He got to pick judges down in Brooklyn, you know, who was on the ticket. So he was. He was an extremely powerful man. And he resigned after the state ethics panel came out. He resigned because the assembly was going to have a vote to kick him out. And you know how rare that is. I mean, in modern times, we've seen it happen one other time with Hiram Montserrat a few years ago. But, you know, he would have been booted from the chamber, so he left. He's been battling cancer. He's supposed to be deposed, and he's been trying to put it off by saying, oh, I'm sick and I can't do it. So now it looks like if it goes forward, he would be deposed on January 8th.
Well, Ken Lovett, there is a question I have for you as I get older. Is there ever going to be assisted suicide in this state?
Interesting you bring that up. I had a story this week just about that. A senator from Manhattan, Brad Hoyleman, put in a bill that would legalize what he calls the Death with Dignity Act. And what that is it would allow doctors to prescribe lethal medicine to somebody who is 18, at least 18 years old, has been diagnosed with a terminal illness and only has no more than 6 months to live by the diagnosis.
So this is a sort of an Oregonian model, right?
Yeah, actually, it's based really on Oregon, and there's three states right now that really have a similar law, and New Jersey's talking about it, California's talking about it, and now New York is going to talk about it. Nobody really thinks it's going to happen this year or next, but the conversation is now beginning.
Well, you know, in the old days, the church had a huge veto on all of this stuff, and they would just simply say, no, we don't believe in this, and that would be the end of it. But I think that the power of the church has somewhat dissipated.
It has, but they're still powerful, and I don't think, as long as we have a Republican Senate, at the very least, I don't think you're going to see this happen. The church is already...
Some of those guys are getting pretty old right now.
The church has said to me, spokesman for the Catholic Conference, the State Catholic Conference, said they vehemently oppose this, and they will fight this, and the evangelicals oppose this. You know, a lot of the religious groups are going to come out if this becomes an issue.
So are our esteemed lawmakers going to get a pay raise?
Doesn't look that way, but, you know, anything could happen before the end of the year. But
what's the holdup?
Depends who you ask. The governor's people say there's been no real serious conversations, that the legislature hasn't really said what they're willing to do.
Well, that's BS, of course, that there are no serious conversations.
But interestingly, the lawmakers' side of things, they blame the governor. They say, A, he doesn't really want to do this, and B, he's been throwing up red herrings. So basically, he says, yeah, I'll give, you know, to talk about a pay raise, I want you to give me more charter schools and the DREAM Act, which, you know, curiously enough, the Assembly doesn't really want to do more charter schools, and the Senate Republicans don't want to do the DREAM Act. So he seems to be putting up roadblocks that he knows can't be cleared. So then he could say, well, I tried, it didn't happen, and we'll move on.
Well, Ken Lovett, that's exactly how George Pataki got charter schools, right?
Yes.
I mean, he traded them. They just traded charter schools for a pay raise the last time.
Yeah, it's a different time. You got a lot of, you know, the liberal progressive wing of the Democratic Party now is really flexing its muscles, and that's going to be a huge issue next year, the issue of charter schools. And I think the Assembly is very loath to do it. Would they do it for a pay raise? We're going to find out in the next couple of weeks. They have to do it by the end of the year if they do it.
Because and they're close to the teachers' union.
Yes, they're extremely close to the teachers'
union. Which leads us to the next question. Back she comes, like Superman, turning from Clark Kent into Superman, Zephyr Teachout. Now, one of the best names that has ever been in organized politics, now comes out and reemerges as a foe of charter schools. We've always known she was a friend of the unions. Is this a good move on her part?
Sure. You know, look, the progressives love Zephyr Teachout. I mean, you know, they love de Blasio, but they love Zephyr Teachout. A lot of them, and you know, even a lot of Working Families Party members who wanted to back her, think the party should have backed her instead of the governor in a political deal they made. They feel that she stands for their values. So for her, if this is something, if she sees herself running for office in the future, you know, this ingratiates her with the teachers' unions. It ingratiates her even more with the left wing of the party. So politically, it's a smart move for her.
Yeah. I wrote a column recently praising Billy Easton of the Alliance for Quality Education. And I got a lot of pushback from people. Let's say I really shouldn't name anybody on the governor's staff. But, you know, on this issue, what are you, crazy? They would ask me. Why would this governor risk alienating all those teachers? As we've always said, Ken, he got a million votes less in this election than he did the last one, and he had fewer voters, and I have a feeling he didn't get a single teacher vote in New York State.
No, and interestingly, just a few, you know, not long, a week or two, whatever it was before the election, he came before our editorial board, and, you know, you would think at a time he would be trying to unify the base of the Democratic Party, he actually threw a grenade in our edit board when he said...
Very famous.
Yeah, yeah, he basically said that the public school system is the last of the remaining public monopolies and he wants to break them. He said he wants to do more charter schools. He said he wants to have tougher teacher evaluations. He's going to go back to that issue. So he's at war with the teachers right now, and I guess he doubled down on it. And moving forward, I think, you know, he's upset they didn't back him. And I do believe he believes in charter schools. They've also been huge donors of his, the supporters of charter schools. So, you know, you mix all that into the brew, and I think it's going to be an issue he pushes very heavily for in the coming year to, at the very least, raise the charter school cap or get rid of it altogether, which I don't see happening.
Well, look, this is a strategic genius, everybody says. He wrote a book. Not that many people bought the book, but he wrote a book in which he said basically he's learned his lesson about arrogance, about political arrogance. This seems to me to be a fight he doesn't really need, but he thinks he needs it. He wants to make the teachers into the boogeymen.
Well, I think a couple of things. One, I do believe he believes in this, and a lot of people believe in charter schools, you know, and so...
Well, you implied a little while ago that the rich people who are running some of these charter schools are the real target here.
Well, in terms of what, their donors?
Yes.
They're big donors, yes, but the two can match up. You know, you could believe in something and also benefit from
you
that.
You make a point.
And so I do believe he believes in charter schools, and I think that, you know, it's an issue. that also plays well nationally. And if he has any national aspirations...
Does a bear walk in the woods?
Well, exactly. So this is part of his, I'm a Democrat, I'm a centrist Democrat. You know, we'll see if it works, but it doesn't hurt him nationally. It may hurt him with the base of the party. It's hard if the unions are against you to win a Democratic primary, but... we'll see. That's what he chose to do.
Let's talk about fracking. Always an interesting subject.
You love that issue.
I do. And I think it's something that our listeners love to hear about. Obviously, there's a long-standing report that has been rumored about lurking about. First, it had to be checked out by the Environmental Conservation. Then the Health Department. We lost the health commissioner who went somewhere else. Can't be an easy job. And now the report on fracking comes out. I'm a betting man. I say he's going to try to compromise on this one. He's going to say, okay, in a few places, under strict supervision, but he's going to let that genie out of the bottle. That's my bet.
Yeah, you know the expression win-win? This would be more a lose-lose for the governor because a limited program is not going to make the pro-frackers happy, and it's going to really drive the anti-fracking people insane. So, you know, no one's going to credit him.
Well, uncharacteristically, Ken, let me disagree with you because I think you're so perceptive on all of this. I think, in fact, it will make the pro-frackers happy because, in other words, it'll be a step towards where they want to go. And once that genie gets out of the bottle, there's no putting it back.
I think, though, you're going to see them upset. I do. And I think it's the one issue he's really, really dithered over since taking office. You know, in all likelihood, he should have just made a quick decision one way or the other, and we would have been past it already. Instead, he's let it drag on for 4 years. And now, you know, he emboldened the environmental side of the issue. I don't think he expected the pushback from the environmentalists that he got. I think he was really surprised by the ferocity of the opposition, and that put him in a bind. It doesn't help him either. You know, he could put up with that ferocity of the opposition if the polls were with him. But really, the polls are split, and if anything, the opposition is a little more than the pro-fracking forces. So,
in fact, Ken, if I may, the recent Pew poll shows that his Democrat side are the ones who are really getting more and more furious about fracking. So, you know, you can try to play for the Republicans and get some of those people, but this is a blue state, and he needs that group, and he knows they're not happy with him.
Well,
he may
not need that group, though, because there's a lot of people who don't think he's going to run for a third
term. I agree with you.
And so then what does he care? Now he could just be, you know, Andrew Cuomo unleashed. As far as this fracking report, you know, my standing line has been that, you know, Moses came down with the Ten Commandments in quicker time than we've got this fracking report.
Oh, yeah, no. He really, this is one of those places you just have the feeling he doesn't know what to do. Okay, wait a second. I want to know about all that money. We got a special settlement. And how much was it, and where's it going to go?
Well, combined, it's almost $5 billion.
That's a lot.
And it is a lot.
Even in New York,
and at a time. And, you know, there's an old adage with the budget making here in New York, which is it's harder to put together a budget when you have more money than when times are tough.
Where did we get that $5 billion from?
It came from financial settlements from the banks, you know, that during the financial crisis and some other settlements as well.
Okay, so the question is, if I'm governor, and I would be a very good governor, I would take that money and I'd say, okay, repair all the bridges and all the roads and use the money for infrastructure. Is that what will happen?
I think some of it. Yeah, a lot of it may. You know, interestingly enough, a lot of people expected that the legislature would want to get its hands on it and put it toward, you know, school funding, or put it toward things that were recurring revenue, which is not what you want to do with a one-time windfall, because once you spend it, you still, you know, then you have a deficit because you're going to have to use that, you know, fill in that hole somehow. So what you want to do is use it for what's called one-shots, and infrastructure seems the best idea. Surprisingly, both Dean Skelos, the Senate GOP leader, and the Assembly Speaker, Sheldon Silver, have said they want to use it for infrastructure. The governor has said, yes, infrastructure, but he's also mentioned some economic development upstate and maybe tax relief. So we'll see how that works out.
Maybe the best politician in New York State, it's unlikely because I'm sure he wouldn't like to be called a politician, is Tom DiNapoli, the comptroller. Now, in the beginning, Cuomo was very tough on Tom DiNapoli, didn't even endorse him when he ran, not this time, but the time before. Now, I think I sense that DiNapoli may be giving him a jab or two.
Yeah, he's given him a jab. Tom DiNapoli isn't going to come out, you know, as a flamethrower. That's just not his style.
No.
It's not who he was or is. But he's you know, put out critical reports of the governor, and amazingly has been the responses back. It's been really personal when he does criticize the governor. And really, a lot of times that criticism isn't that harsh, and yet, you know, it's like he throws, you know, a pebble at them and they come back with an Uzi, you know. So, but I think, you know, you're going to see more and more of Tom DiNapoli, you know, if he thinks the governor's going in the wrong direction, pointing it out.
Well, you know, it's interesting because DiNapoli, not to pursue this too long, but DiNapoli, of course, had to run that first time without the governor's endorsement. Now he actually beats the governor by a lot of votes in this statewide effort.
Yeah, but, you know, it's funny because, you know, the governor came into the year, his poll numbers were super high. He had talked about, you know, maybe setting a record, at least passing his father's number, which was about 64%, and he was going to do all this stuff. In the end, his two frenemies, his Democratic frenemies, and that's DiNapoli and Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, both got more votes than him.
Yeah, of course, that's because he got himself into a lot of trouble with his own left wing of his party, the progressive wing of his party. Now, the governor has to appoint, from a list, I believe, the justices of the highest court, which is our Court of Appeals. And there seems to be a lot of stalling here.
Well, which one? There's going to be two now.
Yeah.
And one was Victoria Graffio, who was the only Republican on the bench, or one of the only Republicans, I should say. And she was forced, her term ended, and the governor did not reappoint her. He nominated somebody else, a judge, Leslie Stein, but he waited and he delayed. He said, well, I don't want to put it into the political season. So he waited an extra 2 weeks and then he made his nomination. And the Senate was supposed to take up that nomination legally by the end of November and failed to do so. So it doesn't look like they're going to do it until January unless they come back for a special session on pay raise. So that's one issue. Then Robert Smith, who's considered by a lot of people, is really like the top-notch judge on that court. He's also a Republican, but really a brilliant mind. He is forced to resign at the retire at the end of the year. He reaches the mandatory retirement age of 70.
Which is stupid. I mean, I'm a 73-year-old, and I consider that ageism of the first order.
And Smith, I think, is going to be a big loss to the court. But anyway, the Commission on Judicial Nomination just forwarded the governor another seven names to consider. He has to pick off that list, one of which is a guy named Stephen Younger, who's a very prominent lawyer from New York City and Jersey. He's voted most of his life in Jersey up until about a year ago. And the thing about Stephen Younger that's interesting is he was a law school classmate of Andrew Cuomo. He's donated $23,000 to Andrew Cuomo. He was on Andrew Cuomo's, he headed up Andrew Cuomo's transition team 4 years ago. And on top of that, which oddly enough was not in his bio released by the Commission on Judicial Nomination, for years he was a counsel to that commission. So wow. He was one of their own, but they left that out of the bio they put out when they recommended him as one of the seven finalists.
Something stinks in Denmark.
So I would be very shocked if it's not Stephen Younger. And look, the guy's qualified. I mean, he seems qualified. He has a very good background. But, you know, it goes back to that issue we've talked about for 4 years here, which is, you know, if he is picked, of course. Why is there always people who Cuomo has attachments to for all these jobs, for all these important roles of oversight and independence, and they all have ties to the governor? They can never find someone who's not tied to him.
That's the way the politicians work.
Yep.
Well, we want to make mention of the fact that our friend Mario Cuomo, the governor's father, with whom I had a program for years, is quite ill and in the hospital. And I think our feelings and our hopes go out to his family, and we hope things get better.
I agree. It's just sad, you know, but he was a terrific orator, and, you know, he was nationally known, and hopefully he gets better, but he doesn't seem to be doing too well.
No. Okay, so Ken Levitt, we thank you so much. Our guest has been columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, generally regarded as the best of the weekly columnists, Ken Levitt. Ken, thanks so much for joining us. This is Alan Chartok. Signing off for this week. Be with us next week.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.